Hey, Wonderfuls, welcome to episode 391 of the podcast with my guest, author Maureen Gu. I want to just give you a quick heads up that this was an episode that I recorded kind of thinking I maybe had another lady guest left in the sort of timeline of how the weeks were shaking out. So this is like early pandemic times. So I want you to enjoy not only the delightfulness that is Maureen, but also enjoy the little time capsule that this episode has quickly become, because if you think back to the beginning of the pandemic, doesn't it feel like it's 6 years ago? I'm thinking of you guys. Hope everybody's doing well. Talk to you soon. Hopefully it will feel more like a hang and less like you're also working today on a Saturday, as if the days have any meaning anymore. But they do.
I know.
The days do have meaning, and they have to have meaning. Or for, I think, freelancers, people who work or who work from home and are used to doing that, you know, everything can flow together in a way that, frankly, is maybe not super healthy for any of us. So
yeah, I agree. I'm like on a deadline right now. So I've been in that deadline mode where my days blur together anyways. And so it hasn't felt like the quarantine at all. It's suddenly, This is like the most normal I felt, because it's like, oh yes, this stress is very familiar.
Oh my gosh. Is that something that you, is that something that you bump up against on a semi-regular basis, or have you had enough time between deadlines in general in the last couple of years that when this rears up, it really is like a very specific and different feeling?
I've had it pretty consistently, you know, so I had 3 books come out right after each other. So a book a year from 2017 to last year. And so I consciously gave myself a break. I don't have another book coming out this year, which now I realize might be kind of a blessing in disguise. You know, it just seems like a really hard time to try to get your books out there. And I don't even know, I doubt I'm going to have a book out next year, because I'm working on one right now. And I don't know if I'm going to sell it this year, because I'm also pregnant.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So I'm trying to finish this book in a writing project I got hired to do before this baby comes in August, late August. And so we'll see. But yes, I've been on this kind of like constant state of one deadline to the next. Like my friends and I, who are also authors, like we just laugh, because like when you say I'm on deadline, like that has lost all meaning, because we're always on some deadline. But it is like concentrated moments of like stress. And then, you know, I know a lot of other authors are different from me. A lot of them don't take long breaks in between, because they're already like trying to hustle with their next book, or they just really have to be working all the time. They just prefer that. But I love taking like long, 2-3 month long breaks between projects. And I'm happy to not write for 2-3 months. Like I do not miss it.
Sure.
So yeah, I've been living in that pattern for a long time. And this, I've taken the longest break I ever had, because I just did it consciously. And then 2, you know, I got pregnant. And so it kind of like physically and mentally exhausted me. And then now it's this pandemic. And so it's like,
oh my God,
I took a longer break than usual, but now I'm back in it. And it feels very familiar and like the most normal thing that's happened since this whole thing has started. Cause I started to feel my life change drastically when I got pregnant, you know? So I was like prepared for quarantine life a couple months before everybody else, because I'd already started doing that voluntarily.
Isn't that something? I mean, it really is crazy how things line up in this very bizarre way. And you know, sometimes it's for the best. Sometimes it's like, are you kidding me? They lined up this way and it means X, Y, Z.
Yes.
Is this your first child?
It is, yeah.
Okay. So yeah, you really are having this like totally new experience in a situation that people even who, you know, who have already had kids, I'm sure, are like, wow, so you have to go with what, you know, some version of what I went through, but also this, a pandemic. You're the first person that I've spoken directly to. I have friends who have friends or family who are expecting, but you're the first person that I've had that I've been able to talk to within this context.
Oh, wow. That's crazy to me because I know about four other people who are pregnant right now, and I've known like two or three people who've had their babies since this whole thing started in March.
Isn't that funny?
It's so funny. At first I didn't know. I thought I was the only pregnant person I knew. And then people, you know, people announce their pregnancies when they feel like it and depending on when they're ready. And so it kind of, people came out of the woodwork and I was like, oh my God, you're pregnant too.
Yeah. What a game changer potentially, right? To be able to have that sense of community in a totally different way.
Yeah, it's really nice. And I don't know. I think it's a very unique experience that has a lot of pros and cons too, but a lot of unexpected positive things coming out of it, I think. I don't have FOMO because nobody else can hang out and do fun stuff either.
I mean, totally. That's a real thing.
Sorry, but you know, misery loves company. I'm like, yes, none of you guys can go out either. and also there's like this, you have a sense of purpose. Cause you know, I think part of the malaise of this whole everybody in quarantine, people who aren't actually dealing with really hard problems, like, you know, working in a hospital or dealing with sick loved ones. The rest of us are kind of like in this limbo and there's like a restlessness and like uncertainty. And I have that, but I also have this baby with like an end date, you know, and it forces me to have to stay healthy and calm and not stress. Yep. And, you know, I also have like a big thing to prepare for. So I'm like making my registry and trying to organize, like my husband's like in a mode where he's fixing everything in our house, you know, things that we've let slide for like 10 years.
Oh sure.
So it is like a weird, I don't know, it gives me a little bit of peace and purpose, but it also, of course, there's like a whole other slew of anxieties and like worries that I would not have if it was just me having to take care of myself. But yeah, it's a wild time.
I gotta tell you, and this is, but I don't know how to say this without, maybe I shouldn't have said anything at all, but now I have to complete my thought. Everything that you said is exactly what I imagined. Like, it's sort of what I hoped and imagined would be the case for people who were expecting. Like, I feel like I had this exact conversation with my sweetie, which was like, you know, I can see, depending on what your temperament is too as a person, because we all bring in our own baggage and our own strengths and stuff at when something like this happens, that, you know, ideally there would be a totally different sense of purpose and a sense of thinking beyond what's going on here, like, or being able to focus smaller in a way that is exactly what you said, like super important and significant and not to be ignored, and that would feel calming. Like that was like the ideal version in my mind, was, you know, rather than being super, super anxious and freaked out about it, to actually be able to perhaps find some calm in the pregnancy and stuff. So I'm not trying to say like, oh my gosh, I'm so smart. It's more just like, oh, I'm so relieved. Like, you just assuaged all my fears about like someone I care about who's pregnant being, you know what I mean? Like, even though, again, as you said, you're still dealing with everything, but the positives, it's really nice to hear those positives right now.
Yeah. I can only speak for myself. Maybe other pregnant women are a lot more worried and stressed out than me. You know, especially if you're giving birth now, it sucks because you can't have your family. You can't have visitors. And I already know from a lot of my friends who are moms that those first few weeks and months are like very isolating, especially if you have postpartum depression. And it's really important to see people. So, and not to mention just have like childcare support with your parents and or family or whoever right. can help you. So I really right. feel for those people, and I don't want to downplay the hardships that may come. But
oh, sure,
for
sure.
me, and you know, I think it also has to do with the fact that I actually have like a anxiety disorder, and my anxiety weirdly is at its lowest when I have actual tangible problems in my life. And
I right? totally get it.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you have like a real thing, then the, because my anxiety feeds on all these like what ifs and kind of
yep.
really far-fetched catastrophes, you know, and
yep.
there's like a real catastrophe happening. I'm forced to concentrate on that and live in that moment, which is all the stuff that helps me kind of deal with my anxiety. So it is a weirdly less anxious time for me than normal. And yeah, I can only speak for myself, but I hope that other pregnant women are feeling a little bit calm like I am, because
yeah,
it has kept me very like even keeled throughout this thing, with, you know, moments of like bursting into tears because you're like, oh my God, what's happening? What are we living through?
Yes.
But
which I'm doing, and I don't have the excuse of being pregnant. So, you know, it's all relative.
Yeah. I mean, so many times I'm like, am I being emotional because I'm pregnant or because we're living through a pandemic?
Yeah.
Who knows?
That's very much like, that's a little like internal game show that I think we all are playing our version of right now. Like, am I PMSing or is it the pandemic? Am I just hungry or is it the pandemic? Am I, you know, do I miss my family or is it just the pandemic? Most of the time, it's probably a combination of both, right? But I love what you just said, because I think that's something that I think a lot of people can relate to as well. The anxiety coming so often for so many people who have it from a place of like, it seems crazy to say this, but I was just talking about this because I was reading through some of my old journals from when I was a freshman and sophomore in college, and that was when my anxiety was at its absolute worst. And, you know, I was certainly overwhelmed. I was certainly grappling with big ideas and big thoughts that a 17 and 18 year old didn't know what to do with. And, you know, all of the kind of that good, juicy stuff that unfortunately for some of us manifests in something kind of unmanageable. Mm-hmm. But juxtaposing between those journals and thinking about what the shape of my life was back then, and then looking at the last few years of my life when some of the hardest stuff that's been external has been kind of hurled at me, mm-hmm. The difference in how I've responded versus how I would have expected to respond is so wild. And I've just said such the same thing, Maureen. I just said, like, I feel like my anxiety came out of a luxury to be anxious. And that's, I'm not proud of that. I don't think of myself as like an entitled person. I grew up without, you know, money or anything like that. But clearly my brain, what we're talking about really is your brain. Like, does your brain have the luxury to go to this place
right.
in some way? Do your brain's chemicals somehow have the ability to sort of flourish in this particular direction? Because I have not, you know, had the reaction that I thought I would. And I think you're hitting the nail on the head again for so many people. It doesn't mean that we don't catastrophize in little moments. It doesn't mean that we aren't scared or that we don't all go down the road of like, will I be one who falls prey to this in one of these, you know, incredibly tragic, surprising ways? Like, all of that stuff kind of enters and leaves. But if you had told, you know, 22-year-old me that all of these things were going to happen, and then, you know, that this pandemic would happen, wherever, I would have been like, I won't survive that.
Yeah.
I would have been like, I won't emotionally survive any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it happens and your brain is like, oh, I guess I should get out of the way a little bit. Like, even just a little.
Yeah.
You know?
I totally 100% I agree with you / understand. Like, I also had, my anxiety was so bad as a young adult. I think it manifested when I was like a little kid, but I didn't, it wasn't that bad. And then it got really bad as I was in high school, and college was pretty bad too. And then, I don't know, I always associate my meeting my husband with the time that I kind of started to get a handle on my anxiety. My anxiety actually really manifested when I was younger as like a really bad hypochondria too. So yes, if you had told me, hey, you know how you like your worst nightmare is cancer, your mom is going to get it. A pandemic where like a bunch of people are going to get killed and you don't know if you're going to get it. That's going to happen to you when you're pregnant. Like if you had told me that, I would have been like, oh my God, just forget it. Like I'm going to stop right now. But, you know, just to make a note, my mother is fine and healthy now, but like, you know, it's just one of those things that it's really shocking how, and you know, shocking in a good way at how you're like, oh, I am equipped to deal with this stuff. And I do think it's just also survival. You're like, I have no choice. Like, I just have to deal with it. But I do think it's not a coincidence that my anxiety has decreased a little with time, but I obviously also went into therapy in my 30s and that is a game changer. So, you know, I don't know if it's just age or my therapy or a combination of things or having a stabilizing person in my life, like my husband, who literally is the opposite of an anxious person.
Yep.
To the point where sometimes I
feel like I'm looking into an aural mirror. I'm looking through an ear into a mirror.
Do you ever get anxious because they're not anxious? You're like, why do you not worry about this?
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Hello there, ghouls and gals. It is I, April Wolf. I'm here to take you through the twisty, scary, heart-pounding world of genre cinema on the exhilarating program known as Switchblade Sisters. The concept is simple. I invite a female filmmaker on each week and we discuss their favorite genre film. Listen in closely to hear past guests like The Babadook director, Jennifer Kent, Winter's Bone director, Deborah Granick, and so many others every Thursday on MaximumFun.org. Tune in if you dare.
It's actually a very thought-provoking show that deeply explores the craft and philosophy behind the filmmaking process while also examining film through the lens of the female gaze. So, like, you should listen.
Switchblade Sisters.
Where are you from? Where were you experiencing this childhood hypochondria and all that kind of challenging stuff?
I grew up in LA in a suburb in Glendale. So my parents immigrated here from South Korea, like late 70s. And then my sister and I were born in the US in LA, and we lived in various parts of LA, but for most of our lives, we grew up in Glendale. So it's a suburb in Northern LA. And yeah, that's where my parents still live. They live 10 minutes away from me. So we've been doing some driveway visits.
Yes.
And my mom, you know, now that I'm pregnant, it's just like constant food deliveries.
I was going to ask you, all my Korean friends are like, dude, so much food.
Yeah, because that's how my parents show that they care. I'm sure it's kind of a universal thing with Asian kids. Everybody has varying levels of like relationships with their parents, but you know, mine is not like 1 hour long phone calls with my mom. Like I don't even know what the heck we'd talk about. She drops off food 3 times a week for me, and then I send her a photo of me eating the food and it makes her feel good. And then we're like, yes, okay.
That's great. That's great.
You know,
So did you have the kind of experience that, that again, like you, many of the people that I know whose parents are Asian or, you know, or even just that, you know, any first generation Americans that I know are first sort of like living the life from being a baby, whether or not they were born here or not. Mm-hmm. Do you have the kind of like, I hate to say because it does feel like a cliche, but also like as you get older, you sort of go, oh, I get it. Cliches exist because human beings are very similar and that's okay.
but that you do, like, because, you know, many of us feel so disconnected from our parents as we go through puberty, and many of us don't, but that sort of cliche of, you know, you don't understand me, where I'm so, you know, I'm in a different place in my head and my heart than you were when you were my age. Like, when I felt that way, and both of my parents are, I'm sure our lives were fairly similar in comparison with someone like you who, you know, whether you feel connected from your parents in a grander way, in a more profound way, sometimes as a teenager, to have that sense of like, ugh, you don't get it. And then to compound that with, no, Mom, you really don't get it. Like, you were not a teenager here.
Yeah.
Did you feel that?
100%. I mean, it's something that it's interesting because, you know, I write young adult novels, and I write, all of my books have Korean American female teen protagonists. So my very first book really was so, you know, based on my own teenage years. There's a lot of angst with parents and kind of the cultural divide. It is cliche, but it's real. And I would say that my parents were actually pretty Americanized compared to a lot of my other Korean friends. So I grew up, Glendale is like a very, very diverse suburb of LA. It is mostly immigrant kids and immigrant families.
Yeah.
So
I love how diverse Glendale is. I live very close to there. So that's sort of, it's like West Hollywood is technically closer if you wanted to go to like a Target or a Whole Foods or whatever. And I will pop over to Glendale every time,
yeah,
just because it's just an easier place to get to be and interact with people from my experience.
Yeah. Glendale is actually, to me, like the best place to do all your like big box shopping. You're like guaranteed,
yeah,
parking,
right,
space, and that you just hop on the 2 or the 134 with no traffic. This is a very LA conversation, but yeah,
I know.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's maybe less diverse now because it's like a bigger makeup of certain immigrants. Like, it's more of, mm-hmm, like a Asian Armenian enclave now, but like when I was growing up, it was fairly diverse with like a lot of different immigrant families, and I had a lot of Korean friends. So it wasn't, I didn't have to deal with like the typical, like if you watch 80s or 90s stuff where like the Asian kid feels torn between their identities, because I, mm-hmm, never really had identity issues because I had so many friends that shared my identity. So it wasn't a big angsty factor. The angst was like the communication with my parents, you know, like I think that I was a very good kid. I didn't do, mm-hmm, didn't drink. I didn't do drugs for sure. I didn't date. I got good grades. I worked hard. But my attitude was like kind of bad. You know, in retrospect, I'm always like, oh my God, I was such a little shit. You know, and sorry, am I allowed to say that on your podcast?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. 100%.
And, you know, I have compassion for teen me too, but yeah, I have a lot of compassion for my parents. Like every day that passes, I'm like, oh my God, they were going through so much more than I. So like my mom at my age had, you know, how old was I? Yeah, she had like a 12-year-old. And I'm going to have my first baby, and I have my life all together, and I'm fully financially stable and, you know, like mentally ready for,
yeah,
this kid. And my mom was working so hard. I don't know what their marriage was like back then. I'm sure it was being tested all the time. My mom did all of, you know, kind of the emotional labor of the family. My dad had a really hard job that he had to commute to like at 5 a.m. and sit in traffic to Long Beach. And then they have these kids who like just do not understand them nor appreciate, yeah, them, and instead just complain constantly. Me way worse than my little sister. You know, I was the one that kind of tested all the boundaries. And,
oh, sure.
And I didn't test like the boundaries of being a bad kid. It was mostly just like emotional frustrations. And so, yeah, I had a lot of that. And also, you know, even though I was a really good kid, to my parents, I was like kind of bad because of my attitude and the fact that I ever wanted to hang out with my friends, the fact that I left the house to do things, because that's just not how they grew up. Like in Korea, especially when they grew up, it's like you're a student, you have no life, yeah. and then you go to college and then you can start to have a social life. Like it's like laughable to Korean people, like that teenagers think that they have like autonomy or a social life. Like it's so not a priority. And so that's where my parents were coming from. And not only that, but they're just like so worn thin by just trying to survive. You know, it's not like I did not grow up wanting for anything, but my parents had to kill themselves working.
Yeah.
In order for that to happen. We never went on vacations. I didn't have toys really. My husband's always like, wait, what do you mean you had no toys? I'm like, if I had a toy, it was like a hand-me-down or like a Christmas gift from my cousins. Like my parents did not buy us Christmas presents or birthday presents. Like that's just, I don't even understand that life. They just don't buy us toys because it's like, why? You can just fend for yourself in the backyard or like read a book, which is all I ever did was read books. So yeah, it was very hard. I had very hard teenage years with my mom specifically. My dad, he had to work in San Diego for the whole time I was in high school. So he was gone during the week and came home on the weekends. And and my dad's personality is just way more mellow. You know, he had the privilege, the luxury of not being the bad guy. My mom had to do all the, you know,
that's a tough dynamic.
Yeah. So I always have these loving dads in my books and like the moms are often absent because it's not because I don't appreciate moms. It's because it's a very hard relationship for me to tackle. It's so much more complicated than the dad relationship for me personally. And my dad and I always kind of had a very easy communication style of like, no, there was no friction. It was just kind of like, he was very easygoing and therefore I got away with a lot of stuff with him. Whereas my mom and I have very similar personalities, like super impatient, short tempered. We're both fighters. We're very confrontational and aggressive. So it was, and my sister is not as much as I am. So, you know, it was just me and my mom really butted heads and it was hard. They thought that I was always being bad and like I was ungrateful and I'm sure I was those things, but I wish that the one thing that would have changed everything was just communication. You know, if I had known what my parents were going through or understood, or if they had explained why this thing made them so angry or it's upsetting, or if I explained to them, like, when you say this, this is like how I feel, could have been so much more functional. But the one thing that like I always knew was like my parents cared about me, you know, like the reason why my mom got so upset is because she's always paying attention. And I feel like that is like invaluable for your development. Because I have found that, oh, I have this weird self-confidence all the time in me that I think is the foundation is that I always knew that my parents cared about me, which is like so basic, but I knew a lot of kids who were very neglected, you know, and I was so jealous growing up because I thought, oh, their parents are so cool. They let them go to raves like all night long and then they can just show up. And it'd be like, you know, in retrospect, I'm like, that's sad, like that your parents were not paying attention or they're so busy that they couldn't, you know? So anyways, it's like this deep dive and I am attempting to write a mom book. That's my next book. I can't really talk about it because it's not sold or anything, but
sure.
I'm really digging into like a mother-daughter relationship and it's kind of like, oh man, it's a deep dive into all of this stuff. And also kind of like immigrant moms and what does that mean? And you know, now I'm going to be a mom. So it's going to take this whole other.
Well, yeah, that was going to be my question was that something that you were embarking upon before you even got pregnant? And was that one of those things where it's like, well, this wasn't a plan necessarily, but now I'm looking at it from these kind of different perspectives.
Yeah, it wasn't part of the plan. I started writing this book last year. I actually finished it. I have a first draft done. I finished it before I got pregnant. And then now that I'm pregnant, I'm like, oh, okay, it's taking a whole other... I'm sure it's going to be like one of those experiences where I have certain scenes that I'm running and I'm just like bawling, like, oh.
Oh God, I'm sure.
But I think it'll be, hopefully the book will benefit from that. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to be like. And I'm not going to have a daughter. I'm having a boy. So I'm sure that's a whole different relationship.
But maybe that's for the best.
I know. I was, you know,
that's what I always thought. Yeah, I always thought I had such a tough relationship with my mom. I always thought, oh God, I hope, you know, if I have kids, I hope I have a boy, because I won't be as afraid, or maybe I won't impose the kind of, you know, pressure or expectations on expecting my daughter to hate me, like, yeah. I, you know, with a boy.
I've thought about that too. I did actually want a daughter really badly, because it just seemed like the obvious, like, I know girls, like, I understand girls, like, and it'll be so fun to, like, have that. Maybe I was, like, thinking about having a relationship that was different from my mom's. But then, yes, once I found out.
And you would have. And you would have. And if you have another, and if you have a girl, you will.
Yeah. But then, you know, now that I have a boy, I'm like, oh, yeah, I probably won't be dealing with that level of angst. It was a relief. Like,
I mean, I don't think you will. I honestly don't think. What do I know?
I know, but maybe I think will. You will. Maybe I'll have a very angsty boy and I'll be like, oh, God. But yeah, it's the growing up Korean American, that stuff really did. It was an issue for me. And I think I work it out a lot in my books. But I also create, so my first book was like that, but then the next two books I very consciously created characters that had good relationships with their dads. And I didn't want to have like a cultural divide thing. Because I kind of feel like, okay, I did that in my first book. And I also feel like it's maybe not that relevant for a lot of teenagers today, you know, because their parents are now people like me, or a little older, one generation above me who grew up here. So it's not very realistic that all of them would be dealing with that similar conflict in their lives. Although, yes, there's always going to be conflict between teens and their parents, no matter what, especially in America. Yeah.
When you say, when you were talking about being a good student, was that something that you would use as ammunition emotionally, either towards them or even just to, like, to sit with yourself and sort of feel like I deserve more freedom, or, you know, they don't even know how bad I could be, you know? was there a sense of that? Did you use that to martyr yourself in any way?
You know, a little bit. I'd be like, do you even know what other kids do? You're so lucky. You know, and my parents would just laugh, because, like, literally other American kids do not apply to our situation. Right, like, my mom was like, I honestly couldn't give a shit about what so-and-so's mom is. You know, she's like, they're not my kid. And also, like, one time I remember I got a B on something, and my mom was like, you know, she was upset by the B. And I told her, oh my God, it's above average. And my mom, like, lost her mind. She's like, above average? This is what American schools are teaching you that is acceptable. You know, she's like, being above average in America is like, who cares? You know, she's like, American students are bozos who don't try hard. You know? So she's just like, you comparing yourself to these kids is like beneath you. And the thing is, like, I wasn't like a top student. I was just like a pretty good student. Like,
yeah,
you know, I got into a UC. I got like pretty very average SAT scores. I wasn't like a overachiever, but I was just solid. And my parents, so like for me to say, what about like what a good student I am, would have been like a joke to them. Because to them, I was just meeting like the baseline requirement for being like a not dumb human being, you know? Uh-huh. So
yeah,
they would never be like, oh yeah, she was such a great student. They would just say, oh, she's fine.
Right. did you have things that you were kind of creatively passionate about when you were in high school that they, you know, knew and or didn't know about or did or didn't support?
I was very passionate about two things, reading books and pop culture. And they always like the one thing my parents were always supportive of was my love of reading. You know, we did not, like I said, we didn't have a ton of money, and my parents never bought me things except books. Like, I always had new books. So to this day, like, I love libraries, but I don't think about going to them first. I think about buying books because I've always been able to buy books my whole life. And so I read so much, you know, starting from when I was like 7 years old, I became like a huge reader, and my parents very much enabled that. You know, they always bought me new books, and they didn't police my books. That's the other thing that I really appreciate. They let me read whatever I wanted. Part of it was because I don't think they knew, you know, like they would look at Sweet Valley High and they'd be like, okay, whatever. They're not going to read it. They're not going to read the jacket copy. They're not going to have an opinion on it.
Right.
But they knew that. And, you know, I also loved, I worked for the school paper, and that was kind of my big identity in high school, that, oh, I'm, you know, editor in chief of the school paper. I'm a journalist. And part of it is because I didn't know what to do with liking reading and being able to write. I'd always been encouraged since I was, you know, like in middle school or something to write, because that's what my English teachers always, you know, they saw that I was pretty good at writing, and they encouraged me, and my parents knew that I was a good writer. And, you know, my mom was a journalist when she was in Korea. She was a radio broadcast host. And so I put two and two together, like, oh, if I want to be a writer, like, I should be a journalist. That's the only job you can have. Like, I had no idea, like, what else you could do with writing skills. So, and, you know, working for the high school newspaper was so fun.
Right.
It was a really fun job. I loved everybody I worked with. And my parents were proud of me in that aspect, because they could kind of tell that I was a little above average for, you know, in that category. Like, okay, you have like a definitive thing that you're good at. And they always encouraged me, but it wasn't like, they didn't encourage me in the way that, let's say, my husband's parents encouraged him. You know, he grew up in Idaho, and he is a white man, and his parents grew up here. And so they were actively involved, you know, like they set him up. He's an artist and director now, but it would be like, okay, we see that you're good in art. So they found a mentor for him in their town, you know, like that kind of encouragement is different from my parents' encouragement of like, okay, you want to study this thing, we'll like let you, and we'll help pay for college or whatever. And we won't get in your way. They were never the kind of parents that were like, you have to be a doctor or a lawyer, that kind of thing. My dad especially was really against that sort of pushing your kids to do stuff, because I think one of the reasons why he likes America is that it's not so rigid with its educational system. And he likes the idea of being able to do whatever you want here. And my dad is a big reader too. So I think he liked that. I gravitated toward that. And so it was not that hard of a journey for me to pursue writing. The obstacles were kind of myself.
Right.
And, you know, like the circumstances of the world, like I graduated grad school like in 2007 during the recession. And it's just been like a weird meandering path to get to where I am today. So,
yeah. Were you allowed to date?
No, I mean, not that I even had the option. Like, honestly, I was like so, what's the word? Like underdeveloped. No, what's the word? When you're not a late bloomer. I was a late bloomer for like everything, just physically for one, you know, like I swear I didn't get like a real period till I was like 22. So I just not only physically like a late bloomer, but very, I don't know. I've ranted about this before, but I think there's like this very one narrative for American romance and teenagehood. And that's like, you date, you start dating when, or you show interest in the opposite sex or the same sex, whatever, like you show sexual interest, preteens, and then you date in your teens, you have lots of sex in college, you date in your 20s. You have a nice, robust, romantic, mature romantic life in your 20s, and then maybe you settled out in your 30s.
Right.
And so funny, because once I got older and, you know, my girlfriends and I talk about sex and relationships, I realized a lot of my friends, and maybe it's just who I gravitate towards, like, we had such wildly different experiences. Like, most of us were super, like, you know, we were scared of boys, and we just had crushes, and we were obsessive in high school. And then none of us dated in college. Maybe some of us did. And then some people date one person, like me. I dated one person in my 20s, and my husband, he ended up being my husband. Or people just don't date or don't have sex. They're like, whatever, yeah. You know, like, and I realized, oh, there's just this wildly varied sexual experience and romantic experience for women in the U.S. that you don't hear about.
100%.
Right? There's like this generic version, yeah. That's like, oh, what we're fed in movies and TV. And I think, one, it's totally fine that people have had those experiences, obviously, but it makes people feel bad about themselves, especially young women. Like, when, yeah. I think about when I was in my early 20s and I didn't have a boyfriend yet, I was so, like, embarrassed. Something's wrong with me. I'm, like, stunted. And it's just different for everyone. So, yeah, I felt – I had, like, crazy crushes in high school where, like – if you read the poetry I wrote, it's like, oh my Lord. And, you know, like, I'm sure, and I was reading romance novels and I loved romance, but if a boy liked me, I was like, ew, no, like, it just repulsed me.
I get that. I really think that those things kind of can feed off each other too. If if you're experiencing this world of romance in fiction, and it's not something that you have to bring who you are to, you know, it's not something that you have to bring, like, oh, he was sitting next to me on the bus and he forgot to put on deodorant and his BO was bad. It made me question whether I had a crush on him anymore. Like,
yes.
All of those, just like, you're in your own body. It's awkward. Either you are developing and that's awkward, or you're not developing and that's awkward. It's like, there's so much messiness, literally, but also, of course, emotionally, figuratively more so, that if you already feel like you don't know how you fit into all of that in any kind of day-to-day real way, and then you also are an imaginative person who has a love of storytelling, that those things can kind of be a perpetual loop, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, but those are such different experiences of, it's almost like there should just be different words for, like, oh, I had a high school boyfriend or girlfriend, and oh, I was reading these sort of epic romances that, you know, were written in this very skillful, very specific way to make me feel these certain things and to make me imagine these certain things. And, you know, there's a reason there's a divide there.
Yeah. I love that you looped this, like, storytelling into all of it. I do think that maybe it's not a coincidence that a lot of my writer friends and I had similar teenage experiences with romance. Like, we were all kind of like, a lot of us are late bloomers and, like, but yet we're deeply romantic and obsessive. So that's why when Twilight came out, you know, I was in my mid-20s or late 20s when I was reading Twilight, and I was like, this is the first... I get why people, you know, have their criticisms of Twilight, for sure, but I don't think people who don't get Twilight never went through that, maybe, in high school, because the reason why Edward is, it's, you know, that there is no Edward in the world, so it's very safe to have him as your, you know, love interest, or to obsess over an Edward and wait for your Edward, because there's no person like that in the world, especially in your high school. Like, right. Well, you know, it's just like,
you didn't go to school with any glittery vampires. What's wrong with you, Mom?
Not only that, but none of them were, you know, Robert Pattinson and Ray-Bans getting out of his Volvo. Uh-huh. So it's like, so I just feel like there's this thing with teenage girls, or even boys maybe, but I think it's a very specific to girls, where, like, you explore your sexuality in these very safe spaces. And it doesn't mean that you have no interests. It's just kind of like it's different and it hasn't developed into involving human beings yet.
Yeah, totally.
Which is scary. Totally.
And by the way, like, and for what it's worth, that is one of the most consistent experiences I have had doing this podcast for 8 years is just how inconsistent everyone's experience is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just that I never know. And it's pointless to guess with people, even that you know, in the context of which you know them as adults. It's like kind of pointless to even guess what their experience of romance was in high school and college, because so frequently it's the opposite of what you might imagine. Whether it's, you know, somebody that you think of as like, oh, this person's been married to the same person for, you know, such a long time. They got married in their 20s. They must have been very chaste in high school or whatever. And it's the total opposite. Or, you know, somebody that you think of as like, oh, you've got, you know, you always play these super sexy characters on television or whatever. And they're like, oh, no. Like, I didn't have boobs till I was 22 and I did not want to be kissed. Like, it's all, you're right, it's all over the place. And and that's one of the things I love about finding out about people is just getting that sense of like, oh my gosh, we're all so different and yet we understand each other in ways sometimes that we expect and sometimes ways that we are totally surprised by.
What's really wild is that when you write YA novels as an adult woman who has this view of teenage romance, right? Which is like, I had zero experience. I write teenage romances. And it's kind of, I remember I was very torn about it in the beginning because my first book barely had romance. It was very realistic to my high school life where I just had this like crush on someone and my friend liked me, but I didn't like him. You know, like that's like a very realistic scenario to me. But then almost all of my books have been romantic after. And then my last book was just like a pure one day romance. And I remember thinking like, do I want to write this? Like, do I even believe in this romance? And that's kind of not what I'm doing. I don't think it's my job to write a mirror that is reality, because teenagers don't really, that's not why you're reading a romance. You don't pick up a teenage romance because you're like, this is realistic. You pick it up because you're like, this is like the heightened fantasy version of what being a teenager is like. And I try to make it emotionally, my work emotionally accurate and authentic, mm-hmm. you know, but like, as far as like, I want my books to be fun. Feel honest and fun and like fun read. Like, everyone's books are different. Like, some YA novels are way more serious and dig into deeper things and are more realistic. And I feel like they do that really well. That's just like not my forte. So I kind of like gave in like, oh, when I write these romances, it's like the romance novels I read. There's like no historical Duke in England ever looked that hot. You know what I mean? Like, give me a Duke who could like box and like for some reason had a hairless chest and was like 6 feet, you know, 6'3". Doubt it. Like, they're like all inbred, you know? So it's, you know, I just realized I'm just creating like kind of a fantasy and, but I hope that you can still relate to it. And so, yeah, like I do enjoy writing these teenage romances because I tap into like what really nourished me, because they did nourish me romantically. Like, I didn't really need a romance. And if I felt like I needed it, I just like read a book. It was kind of a wistful thing, like, will I ever have this? You know, it just feels so far from your life when you're like a gawky 15-year-old with braces.
But isn't it fun to feel wistful? Like, wistful is, when I really look back on that time, I loved feeling wistful. Do you know? Yeah. I loved getting lost
daydreams.
In the sense of like, I don't know, I just hope one day, or, you know, those feelings were somehow, whether or not, you know, I'm not a psychologist, a child psychologist, nothing, but somehow that feeling was so integral and so just intrinsic to my development as a young person that, you know, I wouldn't trade any of that.
Yeah.
Even the times when I felt really sad and felt really misunderstood, or, you know, did feel a sense of like wistful hopelessness. I needed it somehow. Somehow I needed that, you know?
Yeah, I think it's all part of, you know, the challenge, like the challenges that you have to go through to develop fully. But I also think like for creative people, it was important to us like to have like a rich inner world and daydreams. Like yeah. I remember what sustained me so much when I was stressed or sad or tired or like trying to sleep, because part of my anxiety was I had massive insomnia issues growing up, and it would be like, okay, I'm just going to like have this romantic scenario, my daydream. What if JC Chazé from NSYNC and I met at a mm-hmm. picnic? Like it was just such a detailed like daydream, and then I would fall asleep to it. It was
you
like
needed to give your brain something to do.
Yeah.
No, totally. I mean, it's that is a form of meditation. That what you were doing was a form of meditation. It was a form
was.
Of building blocks to take you to a place in which your body could calm down. And that is so important. And the ways that we all, you know, especially if we're young people and we're not getting that guidance, but that anxiety is there, which, as you know, I relate to, finding those ways to self-soothe mm-hmm. or to medicate mm-hmm. in ways that, you know, in a perfect world are not getting drunk or, you know,
yeah.
taking drugs and making decisions that, like, you know, you can't take back. That, you know, that's huge.
Yeah, it's so true. It's like a mindfulness exercise. It's like, focus on one thing.
You're I want you to do. Yeah. Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
I'm Mallory O'Mara, a weird fiction reader who enjoys whiskey and owns a book weight.
And I'm Bria Grant, a science fiction reader who likes iced tea and reads to escape the world.
And we host Reading Glasses, a weekly show that dives into reading suggestions, goals, complaints, and the really important questions like, what are the best reading snacks?
And seriously, Mallory, what is a book weight for?
Every week, we talk about reading.
It's not a book club. You're not going to have to listen to us review a book you haven't read.
You just have to be excited about books, authors, the bookish community, writing, and talking about reading.
We can literally talk about reading, like, all day long.
Reading Glasses.
Every Thursday on MaximumFun.org. Glasses.
I thought about doing that.
I got to get into this MASH game with you. Let's play a game of MASH.
Oh, yes.
Want to? Did
sure.
you ever play MASH
oh, yeah.
when you were going through all these,
oh my God, all the
these
time.
Phases of obsession? Yeah. Okay, good. Okay, so the first one I want to start out with, unsurprisingly probably, is three books from that era in your life that you can jump into and just get all of those feelings like that you got from those books, but knowing like you can go all the way in, and whether or not you're you or you're, you know, somebody else, just what world would you want to jump into of those books?
Oh, okay. The books from when I was a teenager.
I think for this category, I'm going to lean into you being a teen. I'm not going to stick you in teenage life
sure.
And desires for the entire MASH game, but I got to know.
I'm looking at my bookshelf. It's interesting because I think when I was a teen, I was actually reading a lot of, I read like a lot of John Grisham and then like the required reading. And there was no YA category back then. So I didn't really read those books.
Okay.
But I would say like I read over and over again, I read Gone with the Wind.
Great.
You know, problematic fave. I also loved Jurassic Park. Yeah.
I read Michael Crichton over and over, just
it
like you said. Like, I don't know, like, why did I need to read Sphere three times? I don't know. Like, I do not know. It's not.
Oh my gosh.
Somehow, that was really, is really something I kept coming back to.
A lot of my friends and I, we talk about our weird Michael Crichton faces. And then, you know, a book that I always go back to, like, since I was a kid, teenagers, an adult, is Little Women.
Yes, great. This is good. You really have, like, a nice cross-section of, like, weird classics that all are very, very different one from the other, and each have, like, a very special place in history. okay, great. Next category, let's do Let's do three. Let's get into our foods. Got to get into our foods. Three foods that either for in this reality are, you know, you feel sort of are ecologically a bad decision or calorically or you're allergic or it's something that you've only, you know, you've had a couple of times, but it's not something you can get all the time. We're going to create this alternate universe in which everything is accessible. Nothing is bad for anyone, including you. And you can have as much as you want with zero consequences. Three things.
Okay. So three foods in that category. All right. Oh my gosh. Cap'n Crunch cereal.
Oh my gosh. What a wonderful choice.
I have that all the time now as a pregnant woman in my home an emergency food.
When I think about cereals, especially like cereals and candy for sure, but even things that I don't have as much anymore, my experience of remembering the taste, for example, of Berry Berry Kicks is so strong. Like I can just taste, I know what they taste like dry. I know what they taste like partially milked. I know what they taste like soggy. And I know what the milk tastes like after you've eaten all the cereal. Like it's all in there in such a visceral way.
I know. And it's just like the quickest way to go back to that place or just like be comforted.
Yes.
So yeah, Cap'n Crunch. Yes. The other is just straight up ramen, like packaged ramen at home.
Yes, indeed.
It's my favorite. I always love it. I feel like you can make it delicious too if you want. Add an egg, eggs, scallions, veggies, what have you.
Heck yeah.
And I mean, pizza. Like I literally, if someone says pizza or shows a photo of pizza like on my social media, I'm like, I cannot rest until I have pizza. is not a pregnant woman thing.
It's
like forever.
No, understood. Understood. I feel like that too. I feel like pizza is unfair to other food groups when you like pizza is a food group. First of all, I just revealed that in thought. But like if someone's like, do you want sushi? Like, and I love sushi, but it's tough, man. If someone includes pizza.
Yes, as an option.
It's like the world slows down for a second and pizza gets said and it gets more weight and time. And then everything goes back to the normal pace. And you're like, why can I not stop thinking about pizza now?
No.
Interesting.
And it's like for me, pizza, I want to eat it any time of day. Like I will eat a cold slice in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
If I have leftovers.
Yeah.
I will definitely eat it for lunch or dinner, and then you can eat it in the middle of the night. I don't know. It's just perfect. And I think it's like the most
American thing about me. Yeah. Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
And I don't like fancy pizza. I like just a greasy pepperoni and cheese slice. That's it.
There you go. I've never wanted a fully loaded pizza. That's just not been. I'm like, but I won't taste the cheese and the bread anymore, and that's what I signed up for.
I know. I want to taste like the bread sauce and like the cheese. You know, I get so mad when like people put like arugula, fresh arugula on a pizza. I'm like,
I would make you angry because I do like arugula. I feel, but somehow
good.
My excuses. I feel it brings out the cheesy grease.
I think it's I've
enhancing.
Had it. Obviously,
I don't feel like I'm making it healthy, that's for sure.
I like it. Like I'm like, this is good, but like then you put next to me like a Domino's slice and I'm like, I'll have that though.
I feel you. My arugula is basically my version of you putting an egg in your ramen. It's like, give me the total low grade, like give me like the low rent.
Yes,
but then let me like do a little bit of slight dressing up. enhancement. Okay, great. Next category, let's do three places in the world that, whether you've been there or not, you would like to have a getaway home. And that doesn't mean you have to be sitting on a beach. Getaway for you could be like bustling Paris or whatever.
Three. I have been having, and I've never been there, and it's been on my list, and I'm just like, I gotta go after this pandemic, and maybe when my baby is old enough to stay home alone. I just really want to go to some like Italian island where the buildings are all stacked up on a hillside and the water is blue. That's one getaway. That's like the obvious like Instagram influencer getaway, but it's like,
right.
I feel it deep in my bones right now where I'm like, I wish I was there.
I agree.
The other, this is like a not that glamorous, but it really is like one of my favorite places is where my husband's from in Idaho. we have dreams one day of getting, making a little cabin up in the Teton Valley over there, which is so beautiful. I feel like when I'm in
it is. So
isn't it beautiful? When I'm in the mountain,
I love that side. I love the people don't know. I mean, you know, it's fine and good that people don't know, but that side of the Tetons is so. My dad had a girlfriend for many, many, many years who had a cabin up there, and what a slice of heaven! It's wonderful.
It's beautiful. Like I love the Mountain West. You know, I didn't appreciate it until I met my husband, and then through his eyes, I saw what you know where he grew up and. I love the Mountain West because it's like arid because I hate humidity because I hate bugs.
Yep. You're speaking my language.
I think it's so beautiful when it snows. It's, it feels so big and kind of like the last of the untouched part of America, the West.
Absolutely.
So it gives me romantic America feelings, which are, you know, it's like rare for me to have lately with country being the way it is, but like when I go there, I'm like, oh, I get why people love America. So yes, I would love to have like a little Idaho getaway. And yes, the beach in Italy. And I am also like a city girl. So, and I love Paris. It's so cliche, but when I have been to Paris a couple of times, I've been lucky enough to go. I'm like, yes, I get it. And I would love to just have a croissant, step out of my Parisian apartment and be on a bustling market street, grab a croissant every day of my life because every croissant, every croissant in Paris is delicious.
It really is. It's so gross. You can get off the plane at Charles de Gaulle and like walk over to the saddest looking kiosk and get a croissant and you're like, oh, this is better than anything I've had in America. What is happening?
I know. I can't even imagine being French and having to get one here in the U.S. And I'm sure in LA we have better ones than others, but I do. I would love to have an apartment in Paris. That would be like my city getaway.
I'll tell you what, I will be your neighbor in any one of these three. This is like very much a list that I can get on board for in a huge way. It's exactly,
yeah. We can do our talented Mr. Ripley summer vacation.
Oh,
and like,
oh my God.
Our like creekside, porch hangout in Idaho.
Oh my God. Where we're like, what'd you guys do? And we're like, oh, we just sat and watched for moose for like 3.5 hours. And then we went and lit a fire and drank some cocoa.
Yes.
And read a book.
I love it.
That sounds so good right now.
And then we'd go shopping we'd like go shopping in Paris and then that'd be great.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's such a special city. Yes. 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 Okay, so wonderful. Next category. Let us do three. Let's do three characters from either something you've written or something you've read, or even like a television or character in film. Just basically fictional characters. Three fictional characters that we're going to pull out of fiction for you, and you can have as a chum.
Okay. Well, I have been rewatching for like the 15th time to calm myself The West Wing.
It's such a calmer.
It's like one of my favorite shows.
Such a calmer.
Everybody's competent.
Show, yes. The credits make me cry. Like when I start watching, I'm like, I really needed this right now.
I know. It's one of the credits where I don't automatically skip. You know, when I'm binge watching, I'm like,
No, if you're doing it for comfort, that theme song, which I later found out that Josh Molina hates, and I hate him for hating it, even though I love Josh, is like, it really is.
Okay.
It's like, oh,
hate
my
it.
Song.
He's just being contrarian.
My special relaxing song. I'm safe. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, he is such a contrarian. That's absolutely true. Absolutely true. He'd probably love it if he knew everyone else hated it.
So let me think, who in the Bartlett administration would I want as a chum?
I gotta tell you, that is such a great answer. I almost want to say three characters from The West Wing.
Oh, should
is
I just
so
do that?
Cruel to you?
No, it's not.
I kind of want to hear what you're going to say because I don't want you to have to pick just one.
Okay. For sure. If I got to pick three, then immediately CJ Craig.
Yes.
I also love Josh Lyman. for all of his irritations.
Wonderful.
He is the best and the worst. I mean, I love Toby, but they did him dirty the last season.
They did.
And really still not recovered from that. And I also love Charlie and obviously Leo.
Oh yeah.
But Leo. I don't know.
I love Donna too. Donna,
I know.
Donna to me was so, she's so real. Like, she feels so real to me.
Yes. She's that very realistic.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're just like, Donna, I know you. And I know just how you're going to react to this, but I got you, girl. I got you.
I know. She's great. Like, and I love that they gave her a little more.
Yeah.
In the later seasons. Okay. Okay. If I hang out with these people, though, you know? Like,
yeah, no.
I love
for sure.
Bartlett. I want him to be my leader, but he would like lecture me on historical facts.
He would lecture you all the time.
I don't want that in my life. And Leo would be cranky and kind of like no nonsense, and I would need someone a little softer.
Yep.
I love Sam Seaborn.
Yeah.
Okay, I think those that like they're obvious, but those three are like the characters I get along with. You know what, Donna, you're right. Donna would be best. She'd be like my only real like we could get like have rosé together.
That's true. Do you want to do Donna instead of Sam, or do you want to swap somebody else?
Donna, Josh, okay. And CJ.
Beautiful. Okay, that was a very satisfying category for me. very satisfying indeed. Okay, next category, let's do three superpowers that you can have. Rest assured, they're not just on all the time. So like if you pick telepathy, you don't have to just listen to someone droning on about something to themselves in their own head. Like you can sort of turn on and off your superpowers.
Okay.
Three.
I would not choose telepathy because that would make me so anxious because I would hear people talking shit about me all the time.
I would never in a million years pick it.
I don't want to know what you think about me all the time.
I would be like, oh God, I can know if I want to know, but I don't want to know, but I could know. Oh, I could know.
I also think there's some value to lying and like not knowing what people, you know, like... We don't have to know the truth all the time. We need to be a little buffered.
Also, 100% yes. And also people... There's a reason that we have our thoughts, and a lot of the time we think 8 million shitty things before we get to the truth, or we lie to ourselves about how we really feel about something. And if it's just telepathy, if someone's like, ugh, I hate Janet right now, like in my mind, I'm going to walk away with that as a pure hatred rather than the person who's like, actually, I was in a bad mood and she looked really cute that day and I felt even though I was wrong. And so, you know what I mean? Like there's so much nuance to every thought any person has at any given time. The idea of having to sift through that and hear something and not have that context and not want all that context. No, thank you.
Yeah, I think it's like torturous. It's for our own self-preservation that we shouldn't hear each other's thoughts. Okay, so one would be I want super strength because I really, as a being a woman that's like pretty like fragile looking, I guess, I would love to be able to know that I can always protect myself and other people, like literally.
Love it.
I would also like to be able to heal people.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
It makes me just sound like a do-gooder, but like it's true. Like if I could heal people, like, and myself, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Let me think. I would also like to teleport to wherever I need to go.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Wonderful. Okay, great. All right, listen. All due respect to your wonderful husband and the father of your child. This is MASH. We are going to need some alternate universe love affairs.
Yes.
It can be anyone from any time, real or fiction, cartoon or flesh. It does not matter at all to me.
Okay.
Three.
I was born for this question. my husband knows. I'm like, these are my boyfriends. You're my husband.
Great.
Number one is Taika Waititi. I love him.
God.
Have you ever met him?
No, and listen, girl, it is a painful one when you start to have that many people in common and you still haven't met someone that you love and you know they're great because I now fully know he's as great as you hope he is.
Yep.
And then I went and saw him talk after Jojo Rabbit.
Me too. I was at that screening.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh my God. Were you like, stop being the most wonderful, like silly, great, humble person in the world?
Yes. And then afterwards, I was like, I'm not going to lower myself to like scramble to meet him, because if I meet him, it shall be in a civilized environment. And then so I went out into the lobby, and then he came out into the lobby at the same time. So I stood next to him while we walked down outside the theater. I was literally next to him, and I was trying to say hi to him because I'm like, I gotta just say hi. And you know, he's so nice, he wouldn't care.
Yes.
But then literally these men kept barging in being like, I'm also a filmmaker, and like blabbing to him.
Oh,
and I'm like, you know what? You are preventing me from meeting my second husband. So I was so physically close, but I was like, again, like, you know what? One day we're going to meet and it'll be more special than this. And then I found out like my friend is working on the new Thor movie. And I was just like, oh God. Yes. Okay. So one day the stars shall align. So yes, Tycho.
That's right. The circles are closing for both of us.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we'll have our day.
And you knew, you could have elbowed in, but you knew it feels better when it can't happen for all of us all the time, but when you can meet someone on a little more of even turf, and it really is like, here, hey, I want you to meet a friend of mine. You know, that's just always going to feel, it's just going to feel
better. Yeah. I mean, my biggest like life highlight involving Taika, other than standing next to him in the lobby, was I ordered that little pineapple jumpsuit outfit he has, and 2 years ago, and I got it tailored to fit me. And then I took photos on my 37th birthday, and I tweeted it, you know, like, this is my Taika cosplay that was a gift to myself for my birthday. He didn't like it at the time, but then 1 year later, I tweeted it again. I was like, just to remind everyone, this is the 1 year anniversary of when I did a cosplay of Taika for my birthday, and then he liked it.
Oh, he came back around.
I'm like,
see, look, if you look on the first time, if you'd had telepathy and he'd been like, I didn't like that today, you'd be like, oh no. And then little did you know that it would be a year later that he'd be like, now I realize I was just in a bad mood.
Oh my God, I love your amazing Taika accent. So good. When I went to New Zealand for the first time last year, I was like, everybody here sounds like Taika Waititi, and I love it.
I know.
But yeah, so he's my number one because I admire him as a creator. Like, his movies are so funny. I think he's a beautiful human, and he's also like very hunky.
Yes. Yes to all. Good luck, second and third choice. I don't know what you're going to come up with, but I can't wait to find out.
Okay. Wait. All right. Gosh. Okay. Taika is my number one, and he has been for quite a while. So I'm kind of like, who used to be on this list? Who do I, every time I see him, I'm like, yes.
I love it. You're like, I was born for this question. Oh, and now you're like, okay. Now I have to think past Taika.
For sure. I mean, this is especially now more than ever, Barack Obama. Great. If I ever met Barack Obama, he is the one person that if I met them in real life, like, I don't want to talk to him. Because I'm like, I don't even know how I would react.
Yeah.
And I don't ever want to ruin my fantasy of Barack Obama.
I just
want him to exist in this like special place. I find him incredibly attractive, but also just like such a comfort.
Yeah.
And I'm so like proud that he was our president.
Yeah. God, it seems like a really long time ago.
I know.
Oh boy.
Okay. Maybe I can put a silly one in there.
Put a silly one in there. This is not forever. This is for how you're feeling today in this moment.
I went through an obsessive phase so my husband was living in China for a couple of years working on this movie, and I glommed on to Supernatural. So I had never watched that show before, and to me, I felt like, what is this silly show? My friend, who is a very smart and wonderful author, was obsessed with Supernatural, and she kind of brought it up every once in a while. And I'm like, okay, maybe this is the time that I watch Supernatural because I'm living alone. I want to just like have some. I watched 14 seasons of Supernatural in 6 months. Each season has 20 some episodes.
Oh my God. I feel like I'm looking into my future because I too have been told by so many people I respect, like, just watch it, you idiot. I'm always like, I don't think so.
I know.
I was
like,
no, but I know it's coming. I know it's coming.
I couldn't be convinced, you know, I was like, I'm not that geeky, you know, like I have geeky parts of myself, but I'm not like a full fangirl of stuff. Yeah. But I started playing it. Like, it's one of those shows that I'm like, you don't have to pay full attention to. Like, and I don't say that as an insult. It's like kind of soothing to have in the background. And there's a lot of like Monster of the Week. And so like, if you miss, it's kind of, and it's also basically a soap opera with monsters. So, you know, you're kind of following the same storylines forever. And I got obsessed with the actor who plays Castiel, Misha Collins. I love him. He is like such a soft, wonderful soul. He is like this dorky dad in real life that literally all he does is like charitable shit for people all the time. He has like these children that are like wild and they live this like rough and tumble, like wild life with his like really nice, smart wife. And I just find him to be like such a wonderful man, but like, okay, in real life, he's just like a wonderful man, right? But on the show, he is an angel. And I did not realize that I liked angels. And then I was watching that show and I'm like, I think I have a thing for angels. And I thought back to my things that I've like consumed. And I'm like, yes, I like angel stuff. And my friends are like making fun of me, like, you have an angel kink? I'm like, no, it's not a kink.
Oh, very interesting.
But then
so it really was. It was like, oh, this is reflecting something deeper than I even realized.
Yes. I'm like, I like.
That's so funny.
I like protective, powerful beings
that
are like fallen. So yes, his character, I got really obsessed with.
Amazing.
And I went through like a Misha Collins phase and it was kind of like weird and random, but I still have a soft spot for him.
We got to throw him in here. That's perfect. That's perfect. Yeah. Okay. He's in there. Okay. Next category, let's do three everyday skills that maybe you, you know, you haven't mastered or is just not, is not something that you consider yourself like, oh, I'm a handy person or whatever. Three skills that we're going to potentially give you to wake up with tomorrow. You've sort of downloaded everything and become an expert.
I wish that I am like a aspiring amateur wannabe plant person. What's the word even? A horticulturalist maybe? I love trees. I love plants. I have very strong feelings about trees in Los Angeles.
Oh my gosh, I'll have to send you my I'm so bad. I keep just wanting to say my husband, but we are for sure not married. But we might as well be. He is a journalist and he wrote a wonderful story for Los Angeles Magazine about Los Angeles' trees.
Yeah, I would love to read that. I have.
Yeah.
It's like a growing passion of mine, but I'm not fully, you know, like I can identify almost every tree in LA, but I really, my goal is to be like an expert on trees. And
I'm so excited to send you this.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm so excited to send you this. You're going to be like, oh, okay, great. This is exactly what I needed to read Saturday afternoon.
Amazing.
Beautiful.
Okay. So that's
okay.
One.
Great. Horticulture. Yep. Great.
Two. I wish I could, I wish I was handy. Like I could just fix things. So, my husband is so handy. Like he's very, he'll look at something and he's like, oh, okay, he can figure it out. And, I just hate that, like, oh, my husband's a handy one. You know, like, it just feels so gendered. Yeah. So I wish that I could also just look at something and figure it out. That's just not how my brain works, unfortunately.
I hear you.
But when he was gone, I learned how to do all sorts of shit because I was forced to. And it was so empowering. Like, I learned how to fix the toilet. I learned how to fix the drip system in my backyard. I was like, whoa. This always seemed like this like thing that only Chris could right. handle. And I'm like, oh, I got this.
Unfortunately, yeah, yes, very empowering. And I encourage everyone to have that experience, male or female, if you feel like you can't do that stuff, mm-hmm. if you can start with something easy. The only thing is I definitely have like, I've flown too high to the sun after I've fixed a couple of rudimentary things and been like, I'm pretty sure I can figure this out too. And then been like, oh no, 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 I do not know how to do this.
What was baby it? Steps. What did you, what was
baby
the sun?
Steps. It was. It was the difference between like when a toilet just when it's like a oh, really mm-hmm. basic like, OK, it's the thing in the tank, you know, it's the stopper or the plunger or whatever, right. versus like, no, this is like, you know, this is something in it that has less to do with like just the way the handle connects to right. when the water gets linen, the water pressure coming in and out. It was like, oh, I'm sure if I just tinker with, oh, the water's still coming out. OK, OK, gonna need to turn the entire water system off to keep this from being a very big problem.
I mean, that's just you hit the limit because sometimes people just have to be an limit. Expert, you know, and it's okay. We can't yeah. be an expert, but
that's
yeah,
right.
being able
that's
to right. like figure out basic things like, yeah, the other day too, during this pandemic, I realized, you know, like you end up doing things, spending a lot of time on shit that you would be like, I don't have time for this. Like, or I'll just take it to somebody to fix it. Like, so my little right. Dyson handheld vacuum was making weird sounds. And I just like I sat at my dining room table at midnight. My husband was working in silence too. That's the funny thing. Like usually I need a podcast or two. I'm like, no, I'm going to do this in sure. silence. Like at midnight.
Oh, this is very impressive to me right
took
now.
Took apart my vacuum. And like, I also get this stubborn streak of like, figure it out. I don't want to YouTube it. So
right.
I like sat there and spent 1 hour taking apart my, and I fixed it. It was something dumb, you
that
know, nothing complicated.
Is awesome.
But I felt
awesome,
so proud of myself.
As you should.
And I do think that women in particular were just not taught to hone that skill or practice it, you know, growing
correct.
Up. It's like,
correct.
Oh, that's like your dad can fix it or like have like a boy fix it. And so,
I agree.
It is something I'm learning to do. Okay. So sorry, that's my long answer for the second one.
No, and no, it's a great answer.
The third one is I think I have a little knack for it. But I wish I had a full gift for learning new languages.
Great.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Fabulous.
Like, I wish I could be, like, a spy, like, international spy and speak, like, 10 different languages.
I know. Oh, geez, so satisfying. So satisfying. Because all the stuff that comes along with that, too, right? Like,
yes.
understanding the nuances of culture that can only be truly digested through a culture's language is so fascinating and wonderful to me.
Yeah.
So 100% agree. Okay. Last category. Let's do, well, I've really been on this kick lately because we've all been spending so much time at home. So I'm going to do this. This is a sort of like Harry Potter room of requirement type of a category where your house is exactly the way it is right now, but there's a magical door that doesn't extend any of the actual square footage. But when you open the door, size is not an issue. Three rooms that it would be amazing to have as part of your existing structure that magically can kind of appear.
Oh, okay. I already know two of them right off the bat. One would be right. like a Beauty and the Beast library.
Amazing.
Floor to ceiling, books, fancy letters, windows, cozy nooks, every book yep. that I would want to read in there.
Wonderful.
Okay. Second would be a giant, glorious Hearst-style indoor pool. I love swimming. It's like I feel so calm and at peace when I'm in a body of water. And I think being like an LA kid, I just love swimming pools. I just have such like good associations with that, with the chlorine. Mm-hmm. And obviously I want an outdoor pool too, but I love the idea of an indoor pool. That's beautiful.
Sure.
And covered with like marble tile. Ugh, so beautiful. Okay. And then the third, gosh, I think it would be like a greenhouse. Like a beautiful, wonderful. Like, Victoria, basically I want to live in like the Beast's castle, I guess, you know, like, like,
yeah,
really
or
like
the Conservatory of Flowers
yeah,
in Golden Gate Park. Have
like,
you been up there?
Where only like yeah. British people would hang out, you know, it's just like beautiful ferns.
Cucumber sandwiches.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fountains.
I love it.
And so you can yep. always have nature with, you know, going to a room.
These are all, yeah, all three of these are so different in from one another, but they're all so calming. They all are so soothing to me. Just the vibe of each of these three rooms are like very,
yeah,
very, very, very
calm. I want my home to feel calm, not like exciting.
Yes. Yes. I get it. I get it. Okay, my dear. I will do my little squiggle. Just in a couple of moments, tell me when to stop.
Okay, stop.
Okay. I am going to do some quick work. Do you mind giving some of your book titles and telling people where they can get them and what they should know about you and where to follow you and stuff?
Oh, sure. I would be happy to. So you can find my books everywhere books are sold. I have 4 books out. Since You Asked, I Believe in a Thing Called Love, The Way You Make Me Feel, and my latest, Somewhere Only We Know, which just came out in paperback last week. The last 3 books are also available as audiobooks. And you can find me online on Twitter and Instagram the most, and both of my handles are at Maureen Goo, MaureenGoo. And I also have a website that has links to everything too, MaureenGoo.com.
Beautiful. Okay. I am done. Boy, God, this was tough for me. This is like emotionally painful to cross anything off because it was such a me list in so many ways that I was like, I felt I was personally losing someone each time something happened, even though you were still going to get things that you like. So first of all, I want to congratulate you. Well, okay, you know what? I got to rip off this Band-Aid first, and it's not even a Band-Aid. You're going to be super like fine with it.
Okay.
But I really strongly was rooting for Taika. You did end up with Misha.
Okay, that's fine.
But like, it sounds like he is like kind of wonderful. So,
I know
we got there
partner.
Last, but mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've got the wonderfulness of Misha. Also in the sort of like you mentioned that it's like a little more of a complicated relationship to it situation within this game. You can go into Gone with the Wind whenever you want.
Okay.
What a scene. I feel certain that you are going to want to talk about all of that, talk about the nuance of that, maybe laugh about it a little bit with some sarcastic barbs with your buddy Josh from the West Wing. Josh,
nice.
Lyons.
Okay.
Really good get on that one. This is going to happen over endless pizza because you can have all the pizza you want forever with no issues. You, by the way, have a beautiful house in the city of Paris, France.
Amazing.
To which you can teleport whenever you want.
I feel
so
like teleporting.
That's huge. And yeah.
Handy right now. We can't really travel.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, indeed. Yeah. You can teleport anywhere you want, and that's huge. You also have a beautiful greenhouse. Cucumber sandwich style in your existing home. And since you're going to be doing all of this teleporting all over the place, it's very handy that you can pick up any new language like that.
Oh,
and
amazing.
Just like get around and navigate, and you know, you're going to be great and having all these wild and wonderful adventures.
I love it.
So that is your MASH future. Very well done, if I do say so myself. You made some wonderful choices. And I want to thank you so much for doing the podcast. I've kept you on for such a long time, and
it was so fun
getting a chance to get to know you under these circumstances. I hope that we get to hang out when things are a little different and you have had a chance to be a mom for a minute.
And weird.
See what all that looks like. I know.
I'm always joking, like, hey, when we come out of this pandemic, I'm gonna have like a 5-year-old child.
I know.
Hopefully
just
before
like that.
Then. But yes, thank you so much for having me. This was great. This was so fun.
Yes. Oh, what a pleasure. Okay, wonderful. Maureen, thank you again, and everybody else, I will talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi. Hey, remember when
of kittens from trees, or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees. Maybe we should move someplace new.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.